Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is All of It on WNYC. I'm Allison Stewart. Thank you so much for joining me this hour. In a new memoir, All That You Leave Behind, a documentary filmmaker recalls her father's deep love but biting criticism, some personal demons he passed down to her, including addiction, and his sudden death at just 58. So that's enough to make for a compelling read. Add another layer here. The father in question was writer and New York Times legend David Carr, whose own life story was the stuff of grit, grace, and pain. And the daughter is a well-known filmmaker. Erin Lee Carr's new book, All That You Leave Behind, is part coming-of-age story under the influence, part eulogy for a media giant, and part guidebook to finding your way. And Erin Lee Carr has found her way into our studios. Hi.
Hi, can you sell my book? That was great. That was a great pitch. Can I write that down?
Here you go.
Woo!
You can have a copy of that.
That is beautiful stuff. Please.
So this book, it's coming out in your birthday week.
Yes.
Right? So it's your happy birthday, first of all. Your birthday was this week.
It was nerve-wracking week.
Yeah. What is it like to have to relive all... Birthdays are times when you sit back and reflect anyway. And now you're having to sit back and reflect sort of publicly during your birthday week. What's that been like?
You know, it's hard because every year on my birthday, my dad would write me an email saying the things that he loved about me. And I'm 4 years out, mm-hmm. and I don't get that email. And so I, in turn, wrote an entire book detailing how I love him. So I think it was sort of a role reversal. I was not prepared for the level of vulnerability that it takes to put a book out.
Mm-hmm.
It's just like walking around without your clothes on. I don't know. And it's just one of the common elements that we share is what you said, addiction. And I thought I was comfortable with that. And it's been sort of a work in progress figuring it out, how to talk about it.
Have you been able to talk about it, or do you have certain ones you just shut down and go into media mode?
I find a way towards the truth to talk about addiction. I think that there's a genuine, deep, weird surprise that, like, you know, if you grew up and your parents were addicted to drugs and we were, you know, my twin and I were crack babies, I think that the general question would be, why would you do drugs? Why
mm-hmm.
would you drink alcohol? And to not have a specific answer to that makes me feel uncomfortable. But then if I had an answer, I would be solving addiction. This book is about multi-generational addiction, and that you can watch something happen, and that doesn't mean that you're not going to partake in the same mistakes. But here I am as a 31-year-old, not addicted. I am sober today. So maybe there's something there.
So you're a documentary filmmaker, and you pursue these interesting stories with these nooks and crannies, and you know how to go for it. What was it like to be your own subject?
You know, I grew up listening to my dad on the back porch interviewing people, and I had this sort of entree way into like a master class in journalism. How do you ask questions? How do you back those questions up? How do you push people? It was all really fascinating. So when it came to my own work, I was not scared to ask the big questions. I was not scared to follow up, but I was scared to do it with myself. And, you know, I think that this could be just a love letter, this book. It's called All That You Leave Behind. It could be like, this is only why I love David Carr. And the book is complicated.
Mm-hmm.
He was an intense, crazy person who was a genius, and he expected a lot of everyone around me, of everyone around him, not just his kids. And so it's about that. So that was like the complicating factors.
So as you're sort of excavating your own life, because you have to go back and you have to piece things together, and you have to ask other people to piece things together because there are parts of your life you blacked out through.
Literally.
Literally. Is, you know, as you're looking at those photos and you were going through this, what was something you figured out about yourself? And you're like, that's the reason I'm like that.
Oh, gosh, that's a hard question. I mean, I thought that I got close to the edge when it came to alcoholism, but that
mm-hmm.
I didn't fall. And then in looking at our correspondence, my dad and I, his emails, his G-chats, that wasn't true. I was fired. I was close to not having enough money for my apartment. All these things that I sort of had numbed emotionally, it was not true. Like, I had to look at the emails and look at it with a clear-eyed version of like what actually happened. And so if I had not had my father to sort of talk to me about my alcoholism, I don't know if I'd be sitting here able to talk about this.
My guest is Erin Lee Carr. The name of her memoir is All That You Leave Behind. So you mentioned this, but I want to bring people up to date, or get them back today, is you and your twin sister were born under really harsh circumstances, premature, both parents addicts, your mom split. So as a little kid, I mean, that was, as you little kid, you grew up, you kind of had your normal, but when did you realize your normal wasn't kind of cultural normal? Do you remember when you were little?
You know, it was, my dad talked to me about what drug addiction was when we were young. He was a very honest person, because we wondered why my mom wasn't in our lives. And so there had to be an explanation. And there's a way to, you know, shrink that into kid-size logic. Mm-hmm. David Carr did not do that. He explained it in a way that was clear and say, you know, we both used to use drugs. I do not use drugs anymore. And, I can't say the same for your mother. And so he always wanted me to be tender towards my mom and understand that, because addiction explains everything and excuses nothing. But then I kind of thought that was normal. I didn't know that was so abnormal until I got to high school and my dad presented me with a manuscript called The Night of the Gun, which is his, you know, really intense memoir about crack addiction and recovery and writing and thinking. And I read that and I was like, oh gosh, that is wild. And he was like, you know, if there's anything you feel uncomfortable with, please ask me to remove. And I was like, yeah, I have some notes. This is some hard stuff. And so like he removed some of the things. You wouldn't think looking at that book, but he did.
It does make me think like, wow, what was taken out? Because that is a very, very bold piece of work.
Yes.
My guest is Erin Lee Carr. One of the things that you examined, a diary your father kept. Could you explain why he kept that diary?
So it's a diary explaining our sort of process and our procedure going to bed as little kids. And it reads as like this beautiful note to his children, but it is a note for the basically to prove his parenting skills to lawyers. He had to, he went to recovery. We were in foster care. He got us back. And he had to show the court system that he knew how to be a parent and a single parent at that. So he documented, you know, when we went to bed and, you know, what we ate before that and things like that. And so it was, you know, after his death, which completely devastated me. And, you know, I think of it as a before and an after. Mm-hmm. I went through his like old file cabinets in the basement of our house in Montclair, New Jersey. And I found these typed notes and I was like, oh my gosh, this is so special and so beautiful. And then it hit me what it was for. And I was like, that's unique.
But sort of fitting at the same time. I mean, given what he had gone through, that, you know, that his parenting would have to be different. It would have to be a different experience given what he went through as a young man.
Yeah, and I think that it's like there's only one David Carr, but in terms of like being raised by our father or us being parents or interacting as mentors with other people, like this book was to serve not just to show you the uniqueness of David Carr, but to really translate some of those values and some of those special things that he taught me, because I always thought there were incredibly unique things in those emails, and to have it just exist in this digital sphere, just only in my inbox felt unfair. And so now that it's like a book that I get to sit and be like, oh, like I can teach other people the things that he taught me about how to do this, I thought like it was surprising and really fulfilling.
Why did you want to share that? You could have just kept it for yourself.
I just kept sharing this one birthday email with all of my friends after he died, where he talked about like who we were and what we were becoming, my twin and I, as young people. And I just kind of like, I was so proud of it. Like, this is how he thought of me. Like, I really want to prove this. Hmm. And I also thought it was so amazing how he didn't sign it himself. He signed it with him and his partner, his wife, Jill. Like, he saw us as products of their union, in the way that they raise us, instilling values, but also like that we were our own damn thing. And I just always thought it showed so much like class and grace, even though that he wasn't particularly known for that. And so I kept sharing that. And I was like, oh, maybe there's something here. And I couldn't do a film. I'd been approached about doing a film before. Looking at his face that much I think would ruin me, like in the first couple years after his death. I mean, I there were some dark points of writing this that, but I think just being able to interact with his words, I think felt like it could be palatable and I could do it and I had enough strength to do it.
The name of the book is All That You Leave Behind. It's by Aaron Lee Carr, who is my guest. When did you realize your dad was the David Carr?
I think when Page One, A Year in the New York Times came out. That's the Andrew Rossi directed film.
I think I interviewed your dad for that with Stelter.
Really? That's amazing.
At PBS.
You know, I always thought he was special and really funny. Like, I remember I watched him do many interviews. Like, he did this one with Chris Rock, and I was just like, how did you do that? How did you know to talk to people like that? Like, it was this ability to speak right off the dome and, like, connect dots in this way that was like a chess strategy. Like, mm-hmm. he was always a couple steps ahead. And so when Page One came out and people really liked it and he was like sort of this focal point of that movie and like his journalism and Brian Stelter's journalism and the New York Times and like my dad being super lionhearted and proud of the New York Times, I was like, oh, wait, he's like a big deal. And then he was like having like 300,000 followers on Twitter. And I was just like, oh, gosh, he's going to be insufferable. Like, you know. He came into his own reality as like a micro internet celebrity. And I think like part of him really liked it. But then he got to work. He did not rest on his laurels ever. My dad worked 7 days a week. He was always thinking, typing about the next thing. And so like, that's what I love about it. Not that he was like, oh, David Carr, but then he like still was David Carr and like just doing the work.
Mm-hmm. You speak so lovingly of him, and clearly you love him. But you do talk in the book about having this sort of weird tension. And at one of your jobs, you wrote, "I would always be viewed as David Carr's daughter there, a title I both treasured and resented." Tell me a little bit about the resentment and what it did to you inside.
Yeah, I mean, early on when I had my first internship at Fox Searchlight. My dad and I got into a bit of a fight on the way there because I did not look the way that he wanted me to look. He actually said, like, asked me if I had showered. And I was like, excuse me, why are you talking to me about this? And he said, you are neither pretty enough nor smart enough not to shower every day. And I remember in that moment, I was so angry at him because it was just because I was representing him. He didn't really care. I looked fine. He was just being kind of a jerk. And so from then on, being his representative in the media ecosystem and people meeting me and saying, oh, it's David Carr's daughter, you know, like, and then after he died, them saying that, but like then me taking that mantle on and being proud of it, I don't know, like it's been complicated because I was not going to be a journalist in the same way that he was, but I wanted to participate in storytelling. So that's why I did documentary film. Every film I make is dedicated to him. I wish I could have his notes on every cut. I try to think about like the questions he would ask me as being like a number one David Carr fan after studying him for so many years. So in the same breath as I answer your question long-windedly,
it's public radio. That's fine. That's what we do.
There you go. I resent him for saying those things. Like, yeah, I should have showered on my first day of my internship. Mm-hmm. And now I know that. And I think that, like, you know, most that would be common sense. But I just think that it's kind of taking the lessons and the harshness. Like, if he criticized you, that meant he loved you. And, like, that's a really special thing.
Did you ever find yourself having sort of, you know, it's a cliche, a sort of imposter syndrome? I got this job because I'm David Carr's daughter. I got into the door because I'm David Carr's daughter. Did you have to struggle with that?
I mean, I think absolutely. I mean, I'm here talking about him. He comes up all the time. I mean, when I look at the book now, it is a meditation on being an imposter. And like, how do you come into your own as a young adult in a profession that you're striving towards? My dad always told me, you know, I can get you in the room. It's how long it's you, your ability to work hard to see if you stay in the room. And I remember I posted that the other day on Twitter and someone commented, but at least you got in the room. Most of us can't get in the room. And so what can I do in service to that idea? If I'm in the room, can I promote people around me? Can I hire people? Can I not just use people based on connections? I mean, it's just, how do I learn what I went through with this imposter complex and, like, you know, banish it?
Mm-hmm. My guest is Erin Lee Carr. The name of her book is All That You Leave Behind. You talk very, very candidly about your own addiction with alcohol. And one of the things I thought was so interesting is you knew you had the problem, but you really feared talking to your dad about it. You, on one hand, wanted to talk to him about it because you knew he would understand in a way that no one else in the whole world would understand. But you also were scared to talk to him about it. What was at the base of the fear?
I remember when there's a story in the book about going to South by Southwest with my dad. I was there reporting for Vice. He was there for the Times. And we went out and we went to parties together. And I drank all of the blue liquid shots that one could imagine drinking. Well, he did not. He had Diet Coke. And I slowly got in a blackout stupor around my dad. And, like, did he notice? I think he left before it really got into mayhem. And so then the next day, I could not do my job. I could not do what I signed up to do. And he was a person that would completely understand having, like, that happened, having that he had gone through it. But I didn't tell him that. I just felt like his disappointment in me and my behavior would be too much to bear. So while I shared many of the successes in my young adulthood, I hid these things because I feared his disappointment. And it really took me coming to grips with it to be honest with him about what had happened. And, like, that's what the book is about. It's just, like, finding that moment where I needed him and being honest about my alcohol addiction and him saying, like, you need to quit for a month. And I couldn't conceive of a month without alcohol. And he said, you can and you will.
You have a twin sister. Does she have addiction issues?
No, I'm jealous. I always am mad at her. I'm like, what the heck? Why didn't you get this? This is, like, I think we should both have this. And she's like, please don't joke about that, especially not on radio. No.
Well, it's just so interesting because you think about the genetic component. And did you just get them all? All those genes?
It's also the question of, like, me, if I'm imitating him. You know, that
You're
was
modeling,
a huge question.
Right?
Like,
mm-hmm.
I'm modeling him. Even some of my characteristics. I remember, like, my boyfriend has asked me, like, do you think being raised by a single dad has changed, like, your version of, like, what feminine is and what masculinity is? And, like, do you think that you're more masculine? I was like, why are you asking me that? But, you know, I think that it was interesting. Like, you know, yeah, I was always a bit resentful that she didn't have this. But now it's like, you know, I think that it could be a part of the modeling, or it could just be a part of the genetics. But I know that my body and my genetics do not go well when it comes to drinking alcohol or using drugs. And so, like, I just have to sort of leave it at that.
My guest is Erin Lee Carr. The name of her book is All That You Leave Behind, a memoir. At the end of the book, it's so sweet. There's this list of things you learned from your dad. That's a really interesting way to end the book. Why did you end it that way?
I think that they have all of these Google Docs with, like, the best lines of the book. And I went through his 1900 emails and, you know, coded them. This is about ambition. This is about alcoholism. This is about South by Southwest. And so there were some of these things that I didn't put in the book. And I wanted to pay tribute to his sort of, like, his total affinity for one-liners. And so I just, like, it just is a very, very David Carr list. Like, you know, listeners might not agree with it, but I love one of them. It said, cats are terrible. They poop in your house. And it's just like, that's me. Right. It's, you know.
There are funny ones too, yes.
You know, and I think that it was just for people who know him or people who don't know him, here's some advice to have you on your way.
I want to squeeze in two more questions. One is, I thought something that you experienced that I think there aren't that many people who have to experience the death of their parent and the grieving so publicly when it is such a personal thing. What do you want to tell people who, you know, see somebody in the public eye, they've lost a family member? What don't you do? What not to do?
Well, I remember I had a colleague from Vice text me said, I heard some scary news about your dad. I hope it's not true. This is before the doctor had even come to talk to me about what he died of. And, you know, I really thought about killing that guy. You know, it was so inappropriate. And he and I have since made up. We've made amends. You know, people don't know. They see something, and we have this reactive, I'm going to reach out and make sure it's not true. But it was true. And, how invasive of a thing to do. And so I think that when you hear about something happening, take a beat. Don't immediately contact the person. Wait a couple of days. Send an email. Compose your thoughts. And I think that, you know, I have had a lot of weird feelings about, like, when people like Anthony Bourdain die or David Bowie. These are men that I respect and admire, but I didn't know them. And they have families that are grieving them. And so, like, for us to take on those relationships and those people as our own is problematic. But I don't know how that's going to change, because people still want to talk about how much they love those people. So what is a way to do it respectfully? To be determined.
You have a film coming out on HBO about Larry Nassar and the U.S. Olympic team and the sexual abuse. Can you give me sort of the elevator pitch on it and when people can watch it?
Absolutely. So it's a film called At the Heart of Gold, and it is the inside look into the institutions that failed all of those gymnasts that Larry Nassar assaulted. And it's sort of a forensic whodunit. And I say whodunit because how did this happen? Mm-hmm. And so I focus really, on the women in Michigan who knew Larry Nassar. They grew up around him. These are not people that saw him a couple of times. And I'm not saying one instance of abuse is ever, ever okay. But these are people that their families grew up around Larry Nassar's family. And so it's this really devastating portrait of what happens when abuse intersects with your life. But also, thank goodness, it's also empowering, and it's these women inside the courtroom taking back their power, like confronting their abuser. And I'd never seen anything like that. So it's a mixture, and it's on HBO May 3rd and premiering at Tribeca Film Festival.
Erin Lee Carr's new book is called All That You Leave Behind, a memoir. Erin, thank you for coming in.
Thank you for having me.
You're listening to All of It on WNYC. Summer Brennan is up in just a few minutes.